Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. One of the big movies out from Hollywood right now is The Wolf of Wall Street, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Martin Scorsese, based on the memoir of a stockbroker who conned his way into hundreds of millions of dollars. But that is chump change compared to the money that Stephen A. Cohen has raked in. He's raked in over $9 billion. He rose from being a small-time options trader to the king of Wall Street hedge fund managers. So how did he do it? PBS's Frontline investigates and shows us how Cohen used his company, SAC Capital, and other Wall Street characters to use insider trading to beat the street. The program can be seen tonight at 9 on KLRN, our local PBS station. In November, Cohen's company, SAC Capital, was a got one of the largest fines in history, the result of a criminal probe by the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI.
My name is Preet Bharara, and I am the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. This past July, we filed a criminal indictment against four SAC Capital-related companies for engaging in insider trading that was substantial, pervasive, and on a scale without precedent in the history of hedge funds. 3 months later, we are here to announce a resolution that is matching in its magnitude. All of the charged SAC companies have agreed to plead guilty. All have agreed to wind down and close their outside investment businesses. And all have agreed collectively to pay total fines and penalties in the record amount of $1.8 billion.
That is a clip from the new documentary by Frontline that airs tonight at 9 on KLRN. It takes us inside the whispered calls, the shady deals, the huge profits that companies, traders, and the investigation that brought them to justice. And join us now to talk about the documentary To Catch a Traitor is the director, Nick Verbitsky. Nick, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nick, in your program, you talk about the edge, and that's what traders are looking for, the edge. What is the edge?
The edge is what do you know or what you know that other people don't know. Now, edge can also be, you know, legal. There's plenty of primary, research that a lot of investors do that give them an edge over others because they've really dug into the numbers or done a lot of research. But when it moves in from the gray area into what's called black edge, that's when you're in a very dark place, legally speaking. So that's information that you get that's known as material non-public information, such as a tip-off from someone at a company about what the company's earnings are going to be the next quarter, and you use that information and trade on it and profit from it. That's what edge is, to a large extent in hedge funds, it turns out, these days, and where a lot of easy profits have been made.
Probably the most famous convict in America who served time for insider trading would be Martha Stewart, another person who appears on PBS. Is that what she did? She insider trading?
No, actually, she was convicted of perjury. She lied to federal investigators. So she was wrapped up in a large insider trading case in the sense that she had gotten word from a guy named Sam Woxall who owned a large pharmaceutical business that some things were not going to be going well for the company. And her broker ended up selling the shares. So she wasn't actually convicted of that, but she definitely lied about how she had found out, that it was a good idea to sell shares.
But it shows you that, people do go to jail for these things. But so far, this one individual that you have in your program, Stephen A. Cohen, the guy who amassed $9 billion, and he's the king of the hedge fund managers, he's not seen even the inside of a courtroom.
Yeah, that's one of the kind of non sequiturs for a lot of people these days is that, as you admit, you ran earlier the Preet Bharara press conference, the prosecutors indicted SAC Capital, Cohen's firm, and basically called it a criminal enterprise. And so understanding why a company can be indicted that way, but not the man who owns 100% of that company and runs it on a day-to-day basis, how he cannot be charged as well is something of a head-scratcher. And it turns out that, there's a pretty high bar individually, especially for people in finance, to be prosecuted for these crimes, you have to establish that they knew what they were doing was wrong. And thankfully, to a large extent, the FBI to this point and the SEC, the FBI did, for the very first time, wiretaps on these traitors, and they were able to get them on tape talking about their crimes, and that was irrefutable evidence. You know, for a long time, regulators would come to traders and with these suspicious trades and say, you know, how did you get this information? And there's this kind of thing that's called the mosaic theory, where traders would say, well, I did a lot of research, and yeah, you know, I knew about this inside information, but it wasn't the reason for my trade. It was this extensive research that I have here. And for a lot of years, that worked. But the way that regulators and investigators were able to breach the wall, so to speak, was through the use of wiretaps, which had traditionally been used only for organized crime and terrorism to that point. So authorities started to look at this industry in a not dissimilar fashion than they look at the mafia.
Yeah, that's one of the fascinating parts of the program that airs tonight on PBS, your frontline special, To Beat a Traitor. You do take us inside the investigation. We see the videos. We hear the tapes, the wiretaps. You hear for yourself the evidence.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, for any documentary filmmaker, when you're able to get visuals or audio to help the tell the story, we were very fortunate in that regard that, a lot of these wiretaps had come out, in the course of public trials and therefore were part of the public domain. And we also got some that weren't necessarily out in the public domain, and not the least of which also was a video deposition from Steve Cohen himself that he had given some years back that up until our effort to unearth it was under seal in a New Jersey court.
So you make the comparison to the FBI cracking a case with the mafia or terrorism or drug runners, and the way that usually works is that you get the little fish and you shake them and you get them and they flip and you work your way up the food chain till you get the big guy. So is that still a possibility? Can Stephen A. Cohen still become a target of prosecution?
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, today in southern Manhattan, the trial of the eighth former SAC traitor began, a gentleman named Matthew Martoma, who's at the center of what prosecutors call the largest insider trade in history. Prosecutors had hoped that Martoma would flip and tell them that Steve Cohen was aware of this incredibly large trade that had basically profited the firm by about $275 million. But to this point, the real riddle has been why Matthew Martoma hasn't given up Steve Cohen. He's a relatively young guy. He's got three young children, and if he gets convicted, as a lot of people think he will, he's looking at more than a decade in prison.
Some serious time.
More like 20 years.
Wow, 20 years.
Yeah, so it's something that, whereas other, industry participants that the FBI had approached had really flipped immediately, that, they didn't want any part of trying to fight the government, and they knew what they had done was wrong.
Okay, we're going to continue. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about their Frontline special documentary that airs tonight on KLRN PBS at 9 o'clock here, To Catch a Traitor, giving us an inside look at the FBI's investigation into insider trading on Wall Street and how some of these people make billions of dollars. We're going to be right back after this break. Stay with us.
This is a copy of SAC's Code of Ethics and Conduct, obtained by Frontline. In the industry, it's called a compliance manual. It spells out the rules prohibiting insider trading. In his 2011 deposition, Cohen was asked by the plaintiff's attorney if he was familiar with SAC's compliance manual.
Now, the SAC compliance manual at the time provided that if you were in possession of material non-public information, you could not trade, period, correct?
Yeah. Well, the way
I
don't know what it says.
Okay, so you don't know at the time, you didn't know what SAC's compliance manual said on insider trading?
When it comes to trading, I rely on counsel.
You know, you're talking about somebody who's been in the industry for 30 years. And for him to be that oblivious of these very central things to his business in that deposition was shocking.
I don't remember what it says.
Okay, so you don't know today, sitting here as the head of the firm, what your compliance manual says.
I've read it, but I don't. If you're asking me what it says today, I don't remember.
What it meant was he really didn't care to have an understanding of what the rules were or even what was in his compliance manual, which just told me he didn't take those things very seriously.
That was a clip from the new Frontline documentary, To Catch a Traitor. Joining us now to talk about it is the director of the special Frontline, Nick Verbitsky. Nick, this shows us this clip is showing us how disinterested Steve Cohen, the president of SAC Capital, is while he's being deposed, you know, about these insider trading regulations. He says he didn't even know the rules of his own company compliance statement. So is Stephen Cohen, is he being honest? Is he playing dumb? Is he being coy? You know, what does it say about the culture of traders?
Well, you know, I've heard it described a few different ways, especially on the from the defense bar, where, you know, that I think what I've learned here is that the number one rule is that you play dumb, you know, when you're in a deposition like that. But really, you know, I think overall, I think you characterize it correctly. I mean, there's a general disdain for, you know, the rules that are involved here, and I think one of the things that's really striking is not just that Stephen Cohen admitted under oath that he didn't know what these things were, but the fact that that's not a real problem, you know, that someone who is managing billions of dollars of outside investor money professes not to know what the rules are about the industry in which he's participating. To me, that just, at minimum, screams negligence. And you know, and unfortunately, right now in the world of finance, and we found this after the financial crisis, and certainly in the case of Steve Cohen, you know, to a large degree, these people are not held to any standard of care. You know, the same way that you would expect a doctor or, you know, or a lawyer or someone to take care of you in, with a certain baseline standard, that doesn't exist here. I mean, for Steve Cohen to be able to say that under oath and really face no specific sanction because of it, although, you know, you could argue that the SEC incorporated that information into their failure to supervise charge. You know, I think that those things are very revealing, not just about Stephen Cohen, but I think about the hedge fund industry in general.
We invite our callers to participate. Call in. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Now, Stephen Cohen, still not prosecuted, still hasn't seen the inside of a courtroom. We cannot say that for, and forgive me if I don't say this name as well as I should, Rajarajarantam?
Right, yeah, Rajarajarantam is another interesting story, and he's a good example of the fact that, you know, unlike the financial crisis where a lot of Americans are still upset that the government hasn't gone after, you know, the quote-unquote fat cats, you know, Rajarajarantam was a billionaire hedge fund manager at the Galleon Group, a firm that he founded in the late 90s, and in pretty short order turned into a multi-billion dollar hedge fund that was focused on the technology industry. You know, through the use of wiretaps, which for the very first time were used in 2007 in the investigation of Rajarajarantam and the Galleon Group, you know, the FBI really uncovered a trove of malfeasance that was going on in that firm, as well as other firms. They found that there were a number of different firms that were willing to engage with Galleon and Rajarajarantam and trade insider information, you know, for profit. And unfortunately for Raj, as he's known, you know, he was a little bit too boastful about, you know, the great trades that he was making based on this information. In the height of the financial crisis, he was called by a board member of Goldman Sachs that he had a business relationship with, and his name was Rajat Gupta, or is Rajat Gupta, and Gupta told him that Warren Buffett was about to take a $5 billion stake in Goldman, you know, at the height of the financial crisis, which was going to be a huge boon to the firm. So in the two minutes before the market closed that day, Rajarajarantam bought a ton of Goldman stock, and the next day when the deal was announced, he made a ton of money. But unfortunately, he couldn't help himself and bragged about it to a company employee, and what he didn't know was that the government was listening, and that wiretap was a major factor in his conviction, and he's currently doing an 11-year stint in a federal prison.
Now, almost everyone has money in the stock market through their mutual funds, through their retirement funds, and things at work. So you got to wonder, is the game rigged, yo? Is it so rigged that with all these guys making billions of dollars, is it worth it to get in? If you lose faith in the stock market because of these tricksters, what does that mean?
Well, I think you bring up an excellent point. And you know, a lot of people make an argument against, you know, insider trading and say that it's illegal because of exactly what you just said. And I think it's a valid one, that mom and pop aren't going to want to put their retail money into the market anymore through 401ks or mutual funds and what have you. And that's a valid argument. But really what I think people need to start understanding about insider trading is it's not just that. It's literally sucking money out of our economy and putting it into speculators' pockets. An interesting study was done by Professor Jeffrey Medora at Florida Atlantic University that examined the time period, the 26 months after the Roger Rotnam investigation was revealed in the press. Professor Medora found that the abnormal increase in the stock prices of companies that were about to be acquired, you know, in the 2 to 4 weeks before the public announcement is made, there's this mysterious tick up in the stock prices of companies that are about to be acquired, which was about 5%. He found that in the 26 months after Galleon, that number was cut almost in half to 2.5%. And he estimates that saved the acquiring companies $37 billion in what are called abnormal control premiums to take over these companies. That's money that is saved now that can be plowed back into operations and hiring people. So, you know, certainly I think mom-and-pop investors, people who put their money into mutual funds, I think they should take heart from what they've seen from the government here and the fact that Wall Street is listening. That's just one study that points that out. But, you know, you always kind of follow the money with these things. And when you see a number like that and that abnormal stock price run up cut in half, you can tell that the government's investigation is having a deterrent effect, and one could make the argument that you're a lot less likely to be taken by a swindler today through insider trading than maybe at any point in history of the stock market.
In the documentary, Frontline airs tonight at 9 on KLRN, we talk about the high profits that Cohen had to get from trading, like 60%. It was his profit margin?
His returns to investors on average were about 30% over more than a decade, which is a massive number, you know, especially on a consistent basis. But, you know, Cohen took 50% of all the gains, and as well as, you know, he took 3% right off the top in just a fee for the assets under management. So you're talking about him delivering more than 60% a year on the investments that he's making. That just doesn't stand up to mathematical reality. I mean, you know, when you look at a guy like Ted Williams in baseball, you know, he's the greatest hitter of all time, and he only batted .406. You know, it's tough to beat the market every year in any actively managed hedge fund. And the fact that he was not only doing that on a consistent basis, but really beating the market by, you know, an order of magnitude every year, you know, that's when you have to look at things. And certainly, you know, regulators and, you know, investigators had their doubts about how this money was being made for many years at SAC and other hedge funds. And now we're seeing that, you know, a lot of those suspicions were right.
But he was saying that he was able to use just regular market patterns and regular information, trading in and out through before anyone else could, and make that money that way. But actually what he was doing is that he was wining and dining and paying bribes and using insider information from people who knew things about medical devices and pharmaceuticals and technology and be able to, you know, score. That's illegal.
Exactly. And a great example of what you're talking about, just started today in Manhattan. Matthew Martoma, who's at the center of this largest insider trade in history, he was in touch with a doctor who was running the drug trials for a promising Alzheimer's drug. And this doctor, he had been introduced to this doctor through what's known as an expert network firm, which would charge the hedge fund a retainer to allow them access to these public and company employees and drug researchers, et cetera, to talk to them about, you know, things that were happening in the market. Now, they weren't supposed to divulge this proprietary information, but, of course, that has happened on a large scale, and the Martoma case in particular. You know, the information that he was getting profited SAC Capital by $275 million, and that's just one trade. So, you know, you're talking about a massive amount of money here, and, you know, that's being made relatively easily. You know, if you have the means to pay an expert network and you get in touch with these people who are on the inside, they will feed you this information, and you can profit from it. And I mean, the numbers here just in total are really staggering.
Stephen A. Cohen not charged with the crime yet, but he is facing civil penalties. Should he be worried? Should he not sleep soundly at night?
Well, I think he has to be worried because, you know, it's been reported and confirmed by contacts in law enforcement that I've spoken with that, you know, the government continues to investigate several different suspicious trades at SEC Capital, you know, that may implicate Cohen, you know, down the road here. So certainly from that standpoint, he's not out of the woods. And now he is, although he settled these criminal charges against his company, he does face a civil charge from the SEC for failure to supervise his traders. And the outcome, he is fighting that, and the outcome of that could ban him from the securities industry for life.
That's pretty bad. Well, he's got his $9 billion still. All right, well, I definitely want to, tonight at 9 o'clock on Kaler and PBS Frontline Special, To Catch a Trader, the director with us this afternoon, Nick Verbinski. Thank you so much for joining us on The Source.
Thanks for having me.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.